Have you ever wondered how sound can heal, inspire, and transform your life? What if the vibrations around you could unlock your true potential and guide you to a deeper sense of harmony? Welcome to Sound Pathways, the groundbreaking journey into the healing power of sound, creativity, and connection with your host, Dr. Karen Olson. In each episode, she explores the profound link between your mind, body, and spirit. From composers and musicians to sound healers and visionary leaders, she'll dive into captivating conversations that reveal how sound shapes your reality, heals our wounds, and helps us manifest our dreams. And guess what? You're part of the conversation. So call in and ask questions and experience personalized sound healing live, and let your sound be your guide to the life you've always dreamed of.
Hi, I'm Dr. Karen Olson, and welcome to Sound Pathways, where every note is a heartbeat, and every story becomes a song of transformation, healing, and possibility. Tonight, we are digging deep with Chuck Lea, the man, the stories, and the music. We'll explore a necessary evil and how life becomes inspiration for what comes next. Digging Deep with Chuck Lea. It's amazing. This is his 8th studio album. And he just draws into his life, he digs into his inspiration, and he helps create what comes next. So we're going to explore all of that tonight. We are going to draw from our lives and dig into our inspiration, because it is about creating what comes next. So let's begin looking at this powerful new release. And Chuck, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing. So exciting. I'm so excited. That I've been so fortunate to be able to see Chuck in person. And it's especially, we're talking about his stories, and there's just nothing like hearing his stories in person. And you're just like, how did that happen? And I had to even ask, did that really happen? You know, and well, it did really happen, because you created it and it happened. So that's what I want to be talking about. So in this new release, which is so exciting, and for those who know and those who don't know, it's the Grammy voting season, which is kind of like Christmas time for me, because we get to hear these amazing, amazing creations that were created by these magnificent people and celebrate and get to hear some. And And all of it, it's a big party, right? Right, Chuck? And you just performed in L.A.
Yeah, we had a little get-together last night. That was really nice.
Oh, that must have been amazing. Wish I could have been there. So what is this album saying that you did not need to say before? And why the title? And what does the idea of necessary evil mean to you?
So I had a different title originally. And after I finished the album and I was listening to all the songs, and it has to do with, well, the original story, right? As a child, I was obsessed with Robert Johnson, with the blues singer. I discovered him in a little record and just started doing all kinds of research. And for those of you who don't know, Robert Johnson was supposedly a mediocre musician, who in the 1930s ended up going to the crossroads and selling his soul to the devil, and all of a sudden changed music forever. A lot of people like Eric Clapton and Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones have high regard for Johnson and his influence on their music. And first of all, I don't believe in the devil, right? But I was just completely consumed by this whole story, you know, and what would make a person do that. And about 5 years ago, I found there's a few places where they say this happened, and I went to all of them, but there's this one spot that was a little different from the others, and I believe that was the true crossroads. It starts off that he's booed off stage at Dockery Farms. This is in Mississippi. About a block down the road is where his wife who died in childbirth, is buried. And then about two blocks from there are the crossroads. So it kind of makes sense where he's booed off stage. He's just beaten down and stops at the grave and then just sells his soul to the devil. I mean, he's kind of given up on it, right? And I came up with the title when I was talking with a friend of mine, and I was telling him, you know, I kind of understand what he was going through. And for us, maybe it's not selling your soul to the devil, but it's having to work a job that you don't like, having to live through circumstances that maybe you wish were different. But it's part of having to pay bills. It's part of taking care of your family. It's part of you moving on to the next step of your life. So I think we all have to deal with a necessary evil of some type. And, and you know, for me, medically, you know, that was kind of tough. And I'm not one to who's used to taking help. I like to help people. It's very awkward for me to accept help. And last year, you know, I got so sick that I couldn't have survived without this help. And so that's kind of the background of that title. And since all of the stories are my stories put into that situation, the whole record is kind of a concept album. You know, we have a wonderful gospel quartet that sings through almost every song. Armand Hutton puts together some wonderful singers, and it's kind of, you hear the good versus bad going on, and there's a lot of symbolism going on and things like that.
Do you feel that the word necessary is there? Because in order to dig deep and really find our purpose, we need to go through something very difficult like that, like going through the flames and coming out as a phoenix.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. I think that purifies you, makes you stronger, makes you resilient, tougher. And when you go through something like that, you're not really afraid of anything after that, right?
Wow. So I want to come back to that story, because it's certainly not finished. But let's move back to your early days, your earliest musical life, and what did that look like? Like, who inspired you and influenced you and helped you, give you permission, yourself permission to become an artist?
Well, I started playing very young. When I was, you know, 2 years old or so, my dad had a little garage band. And one of the musicians passed away, the bass player. He had some injuries from Vietnam and a lot of PTSD. And anyway, he ended up passing away. And he had a 3/4 size bass. And the guys did not want to replace him because he was a very important part of the band. But every time they would play, I'd come into the room and I'd be watching them. And I was just fascinated by the music. Even though my dad wasn't a very good musician, he loved a lot of great music. He curated some wonderful music for me, and it was everything from, you know, Mozart to Stevie Wonder to Led Zeppelin, you know, just all over the place. And so one of the guys in the band, the guitar player, said, "We think Chuck should take his place." And it was very strange, because the first time I picked up the bass, it kind of felt like I already knew how to play it. I remember my dad telling me, you know, you're going to play this. And I was like, I got it. And I became fairly proficient very quickly. And I had a good ear, and it took several years before, you know, I've never had a guitar lesson. I've never had a piano lesson. I've never had a violin lesson, you know, but just music lessons. It wasn't until I was, you know, 11 or 12 before I was in band, and I learned, you know, took some music theory of any kind. But I started creating at a very young age. My dad was a police officer and then an investigator, and he gave me a little tape recorder. He upgraded to a better cassette recorder. And it was one of those you give a, you know, it was a small Sony with a separate microphone. And he thought, hey, you can record your songs here, your song ideas. And I remember recording a song and then thinking, I wish I could add something on top of that, you know. And so I'd record it and then I'd play along with it, but I couldn't record that, right? And so for Christmas, my grandmother gave me one of those huge, ridiculous boom boxes. And I figured out that if I recorded on the small recorder, then I put that cassette into the boom box, and then I put the mic between me and the boom box, I could overdub and overdub and overdub and overdub. And pretty soon, I had some pretty elaborate demos that had multiple guitars and bass and drums and keyboards. And it wasn't until I think that was preparing me to go to the studio, right? To start thinking.
Created your own studio.
And oh, the bass is too loud. I need to turn it down. Or I need to move the drums 10 feet back. And I remember having duct tape on the floor. Oh, the bass amp needs to be here. The guitar here, you know, and I would just stand there. I only had one mic, that little Sony mic that was on there.
Do you have some of those recordings?
I probably do. I don't know. They're probably in my mom's house somewhere.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. Yeah, wow, that's probably so cool.
Probably not.
But that
was kind of the early days of me learning how to create, right? I just told this to a friend of mine that I didn't know how to write a song. I didn't know, nobody ever showed me how to write a song. So when I went to a friend's house, and he had played a Kiss record for me. I'd never heard Kiss. And I heard the song Beth. And I thought, boy, that guy has a similar voice to me. He's really raspy. And I loved the song, and I didn't have the song. I heard it one time. When I got home, I wanted to figure out how to play it. So I figured out the basic melody on this little organ that I had, very primitive arrangement. And then I made lyrics to that melody. And then I started tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. And then finally, it didn't even sound like that song anymore. But the first songs I wrote, that's kind of the formula I was using. I didn't know how to write, right? So I'm using songs that I liked, and adjust and adjust and adjust, and pretty soon it was my own composition. I don't do that anymore, but that's
so
how
cool.
I learned from the very best, you know, the Bob Dylans and the Jackson Browns, and you know, and pretty soon had a very direct path to where I wanted to go and where I'm at now.
Wow. I love that you're an organic prodigy, and how your dad put the love of investigating in you, which I think kind of sums it up. But you're an investigator, and you put it all together in your own way in the story. And something that really fascinates me is that I've had the enormous pleasure and honor of listening to your stories in person. And I remember you tell them, you just encapsulate, you just awe the people in the story. And I'm like, did that happen? And the blurring between reality and imagination was just, you just couldn't even tell. And one time I said, did that really happen? And, you know, I mean, it did really happen, but it really happened in your creation, in your mind, and you just brought it all together for the listeners. So where do you think that storytelling instinct comes from that's deep in you?
I think it's people that I'd looked up to, you know, Guy Clark, a lot of wonderful songwriters like that, Sean Kemp, that are some of the best storytellers in the world. You know, Sean just got inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And we're all very proud of him. And of course, he's played on several of my records. And those are the kind of people that I learn to tell stories from, right? Because I don't have, my voice, you know, I have a strange voice, and it's not for everybody. It's a storyteller's voice. You know, the Kris Kristofferson's and the John Prine's and Bob Dylan, and you know, that I believe that there's a lot of pretty voices out there if you want to hear pretty, but sometimes you find truth in other places.
Yeah, and they come from within. Yeah. So do your songs begin with a person, a place, an image, a phrase, your personal experience, or does each song come from a different place?
Each song comes from a different place, yeah. Inspiration could be somebody's pretty smile, a stranger on a bus, it could be anything, nature, just anything in life, heartbreak, tough times. There's a very element and authentic way of telling the story and being honest in the song, right? So I can say that, almost every single song of mine comes from an honest place. So,
wow. That's really exciting. Excuse me, I just had to adjust something. Yeah, so it makes me want to think more deeply about my own experiences and how I could share them and just naturally have it come from this authentic place, which you just do so magically because you've really lived them and your imagination is so rich. And so how does it feel to you if it really happened, or when you imagine it and then it still really happens within you? Is it pretty much the same thing in a certain way?
Yeah, I think by the time I'm finished with the composition, I feel like that is the truth, right? That is, like if you were in a jury in court, and that's the way I remember it, right? That's the way the event happened. And for example, Coyote, it sounds like just a strange tale, but that is 100% factual. I told you I went to the crossroads earlier, right?
Yes.
And what's supposed to happen is you show up at midnight and devil shows up and you sign in blood and he tunes your guitar a special way and all of a sudden you're whatever you wish, in exchange for your soul. Well, none of that happened, of course. But while I'm sitting in this pitch black area surrounded by cornfields at midnight with only the moon above me, and I get tired of waiting after about 40 minutes. I went there as a songwriting exercise, right? And I start to get up, and when I kind of move my guitar so I could stand up, I see this coyote behind me. He was doing this weird thing where he's swinging his head back and forth, and almost like a pendulum trying to hypnotize me, right? And I stand up, and he was about 10 feet away. I take two steps closer, hyper-focused on his eyes. Yeah. I'm hyper-focused on his eyes, so much so that I don't notice a truck coming from behind me. The truck comes and just speeds past me, scares me, because I wasn't expecting the truck to come. And I flinch. And when I open my eyes, the coyote's gone. Well, you fast forward 5 years later, and it was last year when I got sick in Hollywood. I ended up being in the hospital for 57 days. I almost died twice. I had 4 blood transfusions, 7 surgeries. My skin was green. I remember Sweet Sangeeta and Hai coming to see me. I was so embarrassed because my skin was green, But the first time I almost died, and we could probably blame the morphine for this, but as soon as I opened my eyes, I swear that I saw the coyote at my door.
Wow.
in my hotel room. And even though I was in a strange mental spot with all these drugs going through me, that song was pretty much written. I didn't even have the strength to write it on paper. I couldn't even play for 6 months.
Wow.
I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. And so I remember a few months later being on a wheelchair and sending a line or two to Larry Campbell, who co-produced this record with me, and asking him, what do you think of this? And I'm playing probably like somebody who's played for 2 months, you know, just horrible. But it was enough for him to understand what I was trying to do.
Wow.
And he was like, I think we should record it once you're better. And then I just kept pushing myself, playing 12, 16 hours a day. I didn't have anything else to do.
Wow.
And just tried to rebuild my endurance and my flexibility and all of that.
That's just amazing. I remember so much when you're going through that and everyone's so worried and praying, and really you're such a part of the community and you just offer so much love and inspiration. And you probably already said it all, but...
Before we move on, I do want to say that when I was sick, our little music community came to me, and never in my life have I felt so much love.
I could never
express how much it meant to me, or express how grateful I am for everybody in this community, and made me feel important, made me feel really important,
and
thank you.
Yeah, it was a beautiful experience for all of us. And now what you can share, there really aren't words. And for people that might be going through something insurmountable or a time when they might, could you share something from your experience that they might be able to hold on to, besides what you've already shared and your music?
So I think, you know, Karen, I've had a really good run, right? If I had to die at that moment, I don't think I would complain, right? I've had a great run. You know, I've traveled a lot. I've been married to beautiful people. I have wonderful children. I feel like I've had a rich life. And I think the only reason I didn't die is because I didn't want to die of something stupid like stubbing my toe on a rusty bed frame. That just didn't seem like the right way to die. So it made me fight harder, and you know, I was like, I can't let this beat me. I can't let this beat me.
You got to keep writing your story.
Yeah, I want to be, I'm going to die. I want it to be something memorable, like my life, you know, not stubbing my toe.
Then it went into sepsis. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I got MRSA and sepsis, and it went into my bone marrow. So, I mean, I think it's something I'm going to probably live with antibiotics for the rest of my life. I have a horrible limp. I'm very conscious about that. It really bugs me, and I'm supposed to be on a cane. I was supposed to be on a wheelchair for 6 or 8 months. After about 6 weeks, I was like, this isn't gonna work. Then I went to a walker. I hated the walker even more, and then I got crutches, and then I hated that even more, and I got on a cane, and it was just, I didn't see myself as the kind of person that should be on a cane. And I fall down all the time. Just the other day, I was walking with my guitar player, Scott, in Hollywood, and I just fell down on my face for no reason. It's because my balance is off, right?
Mm.
And so I think it's just something I have to deal with. My doctor is like, well, you know, what I'm concerned with is you fall down and you split your head open somewhere. You know, that could be very dangerous, and I hadn't thought about that, but I'm hoping my cowboy hat will save me.
Yeah, it will. And I love that you keep getting up, and you're not afraid of falling.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
I grew up in a place where you had to be tough or you weren't going to make it. you know, and I know how to take my licks, you know, and I'm a sore loser.
That's a good motto. Yeah, that's great. So one of the themes of the show that I love is the aspect of creativity and how we can create our lives. And one thing that I just love that you show us is how you can take all these different parts of your life, your travel, your history, the people, the places, your memories, and you can bring them all together and they speak to each other. And out of it comes your music. And it's just really, really amazing. When did you know that you had this gift of storytelling and putting it into the music and just having this amazing whole life creative voice?
I mean, I think, you know, it comes from being a daydreamer. When I was a little kid, I would just daydream all the time. And I think I could have been a writer, written books, but my attention span was 3 minutes at a time, you know. You know, and so I try and tell my story in a short, concise way, and I move on to the next story. And I like geography a lot. I mention a lot of towns, and in my traveling, I always see this town, and I'm like, Houma Hills, Wyoming. What in the world is going on there? You know, and I just like that. The way it rolls off the tongue, you know, or Youth and Consequences, and, you know, all these other towns, Lolo, Montana, you know, their places. I remember the first time I drove through Lolo, Montana, I was thinking, if I ever wanted to get away from the law or anybody, hide from anybody, I'd come to Lolo, Montana. And I thought, nobody would ever find me. And that's kind of the whole concept of the song. You know, nobody's ever going to find you in Lolo, Montana. You know, and you know, so I kind of keep little ideas like that in the back of my head, and I wait for them to mature. I know a lot of songwriters will write pieces for songs, and I can't do that. I have to write a song all in one sitting. By the time I finish a song, it's been percolating in my head for a while. I know the melody. I know most of the lyrics. I know what key we're going to be in. I know the tempo. By the time I write the last word, I know, all right, you know, on the, you know, 45th measure, there's going to be a big, massive drum fill, and, you know, a Hammond organ is going to come in here. And it's pretty close to the way it comes out after we record.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of fun going on in your head.
Yeah.
And I have this image of you having this, like this 3D library in your head of all these, there are all of these capsules that you can just like, they're thawed here and then you just take one out, it unthaws and here comes the song.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Cost of that, the cost of that is the house could be on fire and I won't respond to that. I have to finish the song right there and then, you know, and you know, they can be anything going on, and, you know, I won't know what's...
You're in a world.
I'm horrible at a lot of things, but songs are pretty easy. Songs are like a puzzle, right? You know, you're thinking about the arrangements and, oh, fiddle will fit right here, right in this spot, you know, and mandolin right here. It's definitely a puzzle.
Wow, that's so cool. And another thing, you told a story about this, but you're professional work in paleontology, how it feeds into your music and your concepts, the way you weave the history and the discovery and the place and all these buried fragments that you just uncover, and then they just weave together, and just really looking beneath the surface, it just fascinates how that has become a part of who you are. And I want to encourage people, and I'd love to, for you to share more about when you stop separating all the parts of yourself or judging them, or should I be this way, or what if people knew I did this or that and I'm supposed to be doing that? You just live and you have these parts, but they're all one because they're you, and you can create from there. How could you share even more inspiration for people who feel stuck, or it's like, oh, it's so great for him, but I could never do that?
People that get stuck probably are not looking at it from the right angle, right? Because inspiration is everywhere, mm-hmm. right? That painting behind you, you know, it could be anything, man. And when I don't think I've really had a real writer's block period in my life. Hmm. And, you know, if you count the very early recordings, you know, that's 50 years of writing, you know? And when I can't get through a song, I feel like it's not time. It's not time for that song to be out yet. I could love it. I could love it, but maybe I'm stuck with one verse. And now that I'm older, I know that it just needs to, you know, simmer for a while. And when it's ready, it'll come out, you know, and it went very quickly. But, you know, I'm not one of these songwriters, and I know a lot of guys that sit in circles, one line after another, boom, 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 boom. I have to think about it. I have to think about it a long time. And then when I'm ready, I think I wrote the whole album in about a week.
Wow. But you're writing it throughout your life, really.
Yeah. Just kind of little golden nuggets here and there, and just kind of keep them in a safe place until it's time to share.
I think that's a great way of living and not forcing things
with
their own will, that it's supposed to go like this, but hearing those whispers and the guidance and being able to go with the flow. I mean, sometimes we have to, you know, really, well, it takes discipline too, but to not be, when we're anxious and judging, that goes against creativity in our best life.
I kind of feel like a lot of people feel like, I have to write the song. I have to write this. I have to write that. I have to write that. But sometimes you want just the song to write itself. Mm. You know, I could never say, oh, I'm going to write a song about subject A, because sometimes that's not where the song ends up. It comes out in subject Z, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, as I've been doing this a long time, I have this system where I let the song go where it wants to go. I'm not going to force it, you know, oh, it has to be this long or this short or this tempo because that's what's popular on TikTok. You know, I let the song go where it wants to go. And that's worked for me.
You could feel it.
I don't really care about, you know, whether a song's going to go viral or if somebody's going to cover it. Maybe I should care about that more, but I just want to make good records, you know.
And you certainly do that.
Thank you.
Do you feel that your near-death experience changed what you felt was worth saying, or did it just deepen everything in general and so that comes through that way?
You know, one of my heroes growing up was Warren Zevon. And I remember when, just before he died of cancer, he was on the David Letterman show. And David Letterman asked him, was there anything you'd like to tell the world? And he said, enjoy every sandwich. Mm. And I enjoy every sandwich now. You know, everything's tastes different. Smells different. I appreciate the things I didn't appreciate before.
Is it easier to let people who might have been annoying or whatever just kind of just go by?
Yeah, you know, and things like that never really did bug me, right? Because if somebody is so negative that I can't be around them, I just don't be around them, right?
Yeah.
I'm old now, and I'm like, I don't really have time for that, you know. But I'm not gonna fight with somebody or say I'm right and you're wrong and this. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because, you know, in this person's head they're right, and in this person's head, you know, they're right. And why argue about it? Just move on. Just be around people you like.
Do your thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, it would make you happy.
Yeah. And I feel like your compelling song by Coyote that you explained kind of opens the door into the heart of a necessary evil. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, that was the first song that I wrote.
Mm.
And I think it's definitely the what it should be, right? You know, where you're opening the door and you're in the room where the record is living.
Yes.
And Coyote is the front door. And I think when people understand the story, they understand the song, the whole concept, you know, when there's that big fluffy organ part and the drums kick in and the guitars, that's supposed to be a guy, you know? And so it's, there's this big buildup at the end there.
And thank you for generously offering to share the video with us at the end. Everyone's
going to
have a treat to be able to hear it and see you playing it.
My wonderful friends, John Danielson and Mike Rathke did that. We had fun doing it in Huntsville, Texas.
Amazing.
But I was still very bothered by the way I look because I can't stand up straight.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I walk funny.
Nobody would see that.
It still bugs me when I watch it, but they did such
great. That's just part of it. You had to practice that really hard to pull that off, right?
It was really hard for me to walk with the guitar and not tip over to the front. And I was like, I hope I don't fall down. That's my favorite guitar.
Oh, it's really, really, really something, a real treat to be able to see that. It's amazing. And there's just so much that you've shared, and I just love to know more and more, but the more and more I listen to your music, I feel like I know you more because you really share that, your life and experiences and all that you do to help others, inspire others. So before we close, I want to know, how can people follow your music and stories and your upcoming releases and support A Necessary Evil?
You know, it is on all the platforms. Coyote is. The album will come out in October. You know, I'm on social media. I'm pretty easy to find. And
what's your handle?
Chuck Leah 7. There's a Chuck Leah Music, which is mine as well, but I'm not as active on that one.
Chuck Leah. Could you spell that?
Yeah. Chuck. Chuck. Leah. Leah. And, you know, it should be pretty much anywhere you listen to music and
YouTube,
on YouTube too. Yeah. Yeah.
And a website,
chuckleah.com.
Great.
And for those that are Grammy members, there's the chuckleahfyc.com that gives a little more story, on the song. So. And I told the LA Times recently that this was a record I was dying to make.
Oh, that's a beautiful article.
Yeah.
I hope everyone can read that. Wow.
Yeah,
that's a good line.
They're really great folks.
Oh, that's so cool. So your life shows that inspiration comes from everywhere, and it creates who we are, and how creativity can turn what we live through into a work of art. So Chuck Leah, what is ahead, do you feel? And with all these discoveries, and you keep becoming more and more, what do you feel is ahead?
I mean, I've already started writing material for the next record.
Nice.
I'd like to make a very traditional 1940s style country record. It sounds like it was written in the 40s, but of all original material. And everybody recording around one microphone.
Oh, I wanted...
Brian Vibberts is going to hate that, but...
I want to just briefly, could you tell everyone what the category Americana is? Is that the category officially?
Officially, it is American Roots Performance.
Okay.
And since we're just submitting the single for this season and then push the album for the rest of the year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But American Roots Performance.
Okay. That's great. So what would you say to someone with a story that's still waiting to become art?
Don't give up on it. Don't give up on it. Don't turn your back on it. Love it. Nurture it. You know.
What if they don't recognize it, that it's waiting to come out?
I think that they should probably share it with friends. Share it with people that like the same thing you're doing, could like the same thing you're doing, even people that don't like the kind of stuff you do, and kind of use that as a bar of what the general consensus is. And people that like good music will like any kind of good music. You know, I always say there's two types of music, good music and bad music. You know, I love classical as much as I love rock and roll, as much as I love, you know, bluegrass, as much as I love blues. It's just the caliber of musicianship and creativity that goes into those records. If you have an idea, don't give up on it. Let it grow. Let it simmer. You know, I always say that I had this big pot gumbo, right? And I put a little bit of Hank Williams and a little bit of Muddy Waters and a little bit of Bob Dylan and a little bit of Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty and all these great songwriters, Jimmy Rogers. And I stirred it all up, and pretty soon I had my own recipe of gumbo,
Chuck
right?
And, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. And I think that the hardest thing about becoming an artist is finding your own voice and finding your own face, you know, and who you are and who you identify as. That's the hardest part about becoming an artist. I was in my 40s before I realized, wait, I'm where I want to be. Because throughout my whole life, I had good songs, but I just, they were kind of everywhere. I just thought, when I recorded High Stakes, which is the first record that I produced, so whether you like that record or not, it's my fault, right? If you hate it, it's my fault. If you like it, it's my fault. I arranged it all. I produced it. I wrote everything. And that was the first time that I thought, okay, this is Chuck Lea. That's it. And that's pretty much the formula that I've used since that album came out. And I like to use a lot of the same musicians, you know, because they are some of the finest in the world, and they've played on many of my favorite records. And, you know, Larry Campbell, who produced this with me, has recorded with me before. But, you know, he's played on many of my favorite records, you know. Juan Grammys
That's
with
right.
Bob Dylan and Levon Helm and all the bands that inspired me, he was with.
That's great.
It's very special to be a part of his creative process.
Yeah, that's a good thing to notice, that we find people that inspire us and not to be shy about reaching out to them. And so thank you so much for letting us dig deep beneath your songs and explore into your stories. And
thank you for being such thank you for being such a light in our community. Everybody loves you. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're so wonderful
much.
And so sweet. And
thank you
for having me.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And you remind us so much about creativity and survival and hope and imagination. Thank you. And for everyone listening, choose one buried story or spark from your own life this week. Draw from your life, dig into your inspiration, and create what comes next.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Love and blessings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much for joining us on today's transformative journey. We're honored to have shared this space with you, and we hope you're feeling inspired and aligned with your highest self. For more insights, resources, and to continue your path of healing, be sure to visit KarenOlson.com, your gateway to deeper sound healing, music, and wisdom. Remember, Sound Pathways is here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV, Station 1. Until next time, stay aligned, stay inspired, and let the magic of sound guide you.